Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of The Rejected Writers Book Club. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. This week we're excited to bring you award-winning writer and director Amy Quick Parrish. She is a Spanish teacher and a filmmaker. She began her film career as Richard Linklater's Detour film production and as an apprentice of the Austin Film Society. Her screenplay, The Court of Lions, won the Spirit of Moondance Award at the Moondance International Film Festival. And her short, Hokey Smokes, Frank Ellison and the Odd Sox won an award of merit at the Indie Fest. Her web series, Into Dust, premiered at the LA Skins Fest. And she has adapted the web series into a young adult novel, Into Dust, The Thunderbird Chronicles, which will be released on June 30th. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thanks so much, Suzanne.
Wow, I can't believe that you've done all this stuff. Like, because we've known each other for, 6 years now? I think I met you way back in 2016 when I was down at Pitch Fest, right in LA. Is that where we met?
I think it was 2006.
Really? It was that long ago? Wow.
Yeah.
At that point, Into the Dust was just up and running. It was your TV web series that was going. And you've done lots since there. That's amazing. We met when you were working. You just released your series Into Dust, and you were working on that. Now, is that series still going? Are you still working with that web series?
No, I just had the three series at the time, and that was part of the reason why I ended up working on the novel. There was more that I wanted to tell, that it was just something I couldn't quite tell all that way in a web series format.
Right. So tell us a little bit about your journey from teacher to screenwriter and director and now to novelist. Tell us about that journey.
I was an English and Spanish major, so I kind of started out with writing, with creative writing classes, fiction, that sort of thing, and started teaching high school and taught for a while. And probably 6 years into it, I realized I really missed writing and wanted to get back into it. Started taking some screenwriting classes. So I was teaching high school Spanish and was taking kids on trips to Spain. And while I was there, got really inspired to write something that ended up on a feature screenplay, The Court of Lions. And so, I got involved in that. And then interesting, teaching and writing has kind of gone together, because then later when we moved to Texas, I was teaching in a small kind of rural town, but very near to Austin. And a lot of the kids there kind of inspired me and got me going on Into Dust. So, yeah, it just sort of evolved. And, the fiction kind of turned into screenwriting, and then the screenwriting turned back into fiction kind of organically. Yeah, I had this script. It had a very long title, The Adventures of Zara Zoncone in Cactus Canyon.
That sounds awesome.
Was it a comedy? I'm hoping it was a comedy.
No, it was the same thing. And it was basically kind of a meditation on death at the time, but with adventure and superheroes and comic books. And I couldn't get the story nailed down. I ended up a quarter finalist at the Silver Screenwriting Competition, and it made it to the second round of consideration in the Sundance Screenwriting Lab.
Wow.
And people liked the story, and they liked the elements, but, a superhero story in the independent film world, it just kind of apples and oranges. I mean, usually superheroes are really expensive and they're Marvel and they're big and they're zillions of dollar budget and they have to be based on something that already exists. And so Jaime Santiago wasn't any of those things. But people liked it and I liked it and my friends liked it. And, I've met a lot of friends working at the Austin Film Society and at the Detour Film Production. I've met some people. And so, when we didn't make into the Sundance Labs, they were really encouraging. They're like, why don't we just shoot a few scenes, you can kind of see what it would look like. Maybe you want to shoot the feature. And so the thing is about shooting a few scenes, it seemed kind of mean to the actors, It's just nothing. It's not going to go anywhere. So that idea evolved into a webisode, which evolved into a web series. which evolved into It's March, and in June I'm shooting a web series, and so that was really fast. And so the thing bad of that was that it happened so fast, I didn't have time to say no, or didn't have time to think about it, and I thought through her outfit, and I went up shopping up and down Austin, South Congress, has these really cool stores, and found this really neat necklace, which kind of changed the script. It was a turquoise and silver Thunderbird necklace.
Ooh.
And so I got Jamie that necklace, and then I got her love interest, Augusto, something similar, one of those lariats with a Thunderbird, because that's obviously a common Southwestern motif, and the more we thought about it, and then we had some kind of technical difficulties getting her to look like she was going to fly, and between this and that, she became somebody who could turn into a Thunderbird, and that was kind of her thing, kind of, you know, like, Batman has the bat, and Zorro, you know, the cape, and so it's kind of a combination of all those things, and so really the story evolved by doing more with it. So we made the web series, and it was really great to see these characters and hear the dialogue and have things kind of come to life and see the scenery, and it was so great living in Texas at the time because everything just looked exactly like, you know, like it wanted it to, but with the web series, you know, it was great, but at the time, that was like 2008, and that was a new idea to do a web series. There were some people doing them, and they knew what to, you know, how to get them out there and all that, but there weren't a lot of websites that would take them. It was kind of YouTube, and even YouTube was very new then. So festivals didn't do web series at that time. They were thinking about it, but they weren't sure. So I kind of felt like, well, what do I do with this? And then my editor pieced it together. It actually kind of magically came together as 22 minutes, which is like a pilot. So that's how I met Suzanne at the Great American Pitch Fest, pitching it as a pilot. And again, there was interest in it. People like it. They like the idea of a Latina superhero. But it wasn't quite the demographic that the channels, you know, with TV, you've got certain channels, and that's it. And they've got certain demographics they need to hit. And the story isn't really 90210 type vibe, you know what I mean? Some of those CW shows that are, you know, the rich girls, and they're all with their cute outfits and everything, and she's more beating up guys, you know.
Cool.
So,
you know what, I loved it. I have to say, I actually watched some of the series. I think you actually sent me a DVD, or I took one or something, I remember, or maybe it was just a link. And I loved the fact that it was a Native American superhero. I thought that was a really unusual concept, you know, and I thought it was a wonderful idea.
Thanks. Yeah, people have responded to it. You know, that's the thing. It's one of those things. So that's kind of how that evolved. You know, it still wasn't quite what I wanted to tell. So I wrote a pilot. And the good news was I learned how to write a pilot. The bad news was I still didn't nail down the story. And so I finally kind of came to the idea that I had a lot of things that were working and I had some things that weren't working. And a lot of it had to do with how much I was able to make happen in film. So I just took the scenes I liked and that were really working, and I literally copied them and pasted them in the Word file. And I hadn't used Microsoft Word in years. I've been using Final Draft for screenwriting. So I did that, and I kicked out the slug lines. I took out all the formatted dialogue. I put in he said, she said, just so in my own mind it would start to look like a novel. Then I looked at it, and it was already started. So it wasn't like a blank page situation like you're usually facing when you're thinking of trying to start something new. So, so it was kind of cool that I could just unlearn everything I learned about screenwriting and fill in details and describe everything and go on about her emotions and what she's thinking. And, so the novel started to kind of come through, and that's where I could really make the story happen. So, yeah.
Interesting. So, in a sense, the process for you, do you think you'll reverse it now that you've done the books, now you know the story better? Do you think you'll go back in and work with the web series again, or even do a different, like a series two or something?
I might do something else with it, back to a pilot, back to something, we'll kind of see. But also, you reach a point, it's time to move on.
This is
a series, so there's a second book that's in the works, and then there'll be a third book. So I think I'll stick with that first and just get it all hammered out. But it's kind of great because you know the world so well at this point. You know who all the people are. You know what they've done, their backstory and everything. So, yeah.
Well, it's amazing because it's the opposite way around that most people do it. Most people write a novel and then they try and adapt it for the screen, and right. You've done it the opposite way around. So what were the challenges with that? I mean, because you were taking, obviously you had to like kick out the slug lines and all these things as far as putting it on the page, but trying to take something that is meant for a visual audience and then make it more for a reading audience, was there any challenges with that?
Well, there were. One of the biggest decisions was that a screenplay, you're telling the story with a camera, and you're basically third person, and you can be omniscient, you can move to wherever you want to go. And a novel, you can't be everywhere, you know, you can't be in everybody's head. You can change chapters, but you kind of have to think about how you're going to do this. So it was a big decision, should I be third person or should I be first person? So I went ahead, a lot of young adult books are first person, so I went ahead and told it first person, and that way I could get into Jamie's head and get a lot of her thoughts and feelings about Augusto. So that was, she's the guy she has a crush on. And she's grieving her father's death. So there's, you know, a lot going on with her. And then some of her superpowers involve telepathy. So this way I could kind of show what that felt like to be trying out new powers and that kind of thing. So actually there were challenges, but they actually helped with the story, and they helped the story evolve better maybe than the other way around.
I love how the whole thing has been kind of fluid. It's like you find the necklace and then it changes this. You couldn't film the flying and now it turns into something different. It's like this really alive, evolving situation now is into a book. It's so cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, writing a screenplay, I do both as well. And so writing a screenplay is so different to writing a novel. And of course, a novel's really long and it's much more of a marathon than a sprint. How do you tackle that as far as your process goes? Do you have a certain time that you write or what you do? Or is it a different process for you?
Well, one thing that's kind of nice about a novel is that it's longer than a screenplay. So you're in it, and it takes longer. And, you know, I'm teaching. So this way, if it's, you know, Monday through Friday, I'm thinking about school, then on Saturday, I can get up and be right back where I was because my brain is still in the same place. Because a novel, you can kind of just go back and you can kind of be in somebody's thoughts. Screenplay, it's so sparse, you know, there's just not as much to it. And it's maybe more action-oriented. So I think for the way my schedule was working, it worked out better, you know, to be able to just be in that world for a long time. But the other thing is, with a screenplay, you are always moving, and with a novel, there's the danger of kind of meandering, looking out the window, you know, but luckily, I think the screenwriting helped me so that I do keep things kind of moving.
Pretty good. And you don't mind cutting then, because you're used to being a screenwriter where you have to get everything down real short, you know, you don't mind being a good editor, right?
Yeah, I don't mind, cutting things down, and I know I can just, been through all that, keep it in another spot for later.
Yeah, so I think that's my four questions. Oh, you know, one thing I was going to ask you was, what inspired you right at the beginning? So it was called something else. It had a very long title. What was the title?
Yeah. Well, it was originally The Adventures of Zara Zancone in Cactus Canyon.
I love it. And then it became Into Dust. So what inspired you? Can you remember what inspired you right at the beginning to write that story? Can you remember where that inspiration first came from?
I totally remember, actually. My husband had gotten me for my birthday a CD, because it was back when people would buy CDs for each other. It was a long time ago. And there's a song on it called Pistolero by Juno Reactor, and there's really hardly any dialogue at all, but to me it just sounded like a girl flying through the desert. And the more I listened to it, it had kind of super heroic quality, and the only dialogue was kind of spoken, like from a movie. You know, she'd say, I hate robbing banks, and then you hear some gunshots, and then basically in my mind she's flying over the desert. So I just was really struck by that and kept thinking about it all the time. At the same time, there's a girl down the street that kind of reminded me of somebody that I had known in high school, and I was thinking about various problems. And also, the girl in my book is dealing with death, and I had just had my grandma die, so I was kind of dealing with grief, and so she was dealing with grief, and kind of putting all those together, that's kind of what inspired it. And then kids at school, you know, you look at the kids at school, they'd say something, and you're like, oh, that's kind of interesting, you know, you kind of start thinking about where they're, what's going on with them, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you've got a ready-made, like, research base right there. You can just...
Yeah. Well, just to hear that, you know, people talk about older people writing a young adult book, but when you're around teenagers, you hear their dialogue, you know what they say, what they would never say, you know.
Right. The things that are important to them, what motivates them, all that stuff. Yeah, that's a good place to start. I love that this song is inspired at all. Is that song anywhere in the web series?
No, it's not. We didn't use it. I don't know which soundtrack it's. I think it's on the Once Upon a Time in Mexico soundtrack. And it's, if you just Google it, Juno Reactor, Pistolero. It's a great song.
Yeah.
And we had an original composer. His name was Richard Bowling, and he was great. And he did all the kind of soundtrack music. And then my husband did the intro song to the web series. And
Wow. Yeah. He's a musician?
He was in a band in high school, you know, and I was making this, and I came home one day, and he's playing the guitar, and he had it all hooked up to GarageBand, and my son was there, and it was like a surprise. He was recording this song for me.
Oh, that's so cool. So
it was really great. Yeah.
What a good guy.
And then, we called him Vinny and the Iguanas. We gave him people name Harris in the credits, and people start to notice after a while.
That's hilarious.
So he became Vinny and the Iguanas, and we called the song Too Much Tequila.
Too much all keeping with the theme, the Midwest theme. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Amy, tell us how you started your film career. How did you go from a Spanish teacher to wanting to film things? How did that work out?
I was living in Ann Arbor, and I was teaching, and we knew we were going to move to Austin. And I knew, you know, that I was going to want to get involved in film in Austin. Short version is, I had always wanted to make a little documentary about this local band in Ann Arbor. And again, this was back when it wasn't that long ago, but they had video stores then. And there was this really cool Liberty Street video place that would have all the old movies that you could ever want to rent. And then they had a local area. And on the local area, they had just the oddball characters from town. Somebody had made movies about them, stuff like that. So
that's cool.
This was a band that was really, really popular just Ann Arbor, and then maybe Lansing and Chicago and into Ohio. But further away you got, if you got to be more than 100 miles away, nobody ever heard of them, and they didn't really click with anybody. But within, they were like the Beatles. I mean, people would line up around the crowd. They had dance moves all made up, and they would shout out the lyrics to the songs. People would follow them to every show. They played 3 sets all by themselves, and people would yell out the lyrics, you know. They had dance moves made up. It was just amazing. So before I moved, I had always wanted to make a little documentary about them, and I had to do it. So I did it. I just kind of figured out how to do it and did it and, you know, interviewed people and edited. I can't even remember what I edited that on, if it was a... But, and then once I moved to Austin, I was an intern at Detour Film Production. It's Richard Linklater's company. They made Boyhood and School of Rock and all the Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, those movies, Days and Years.
Wow.
And then after that, I was an intern at... So I kind of learned about the film business there. You know, you're on the other end of the phone, answering the phone. Instead of the screenwriter calling, you're the one answering. So it's sort of interesting to see what that's like. And just kind of learned... You know, just some of the ins and outs of that sort of thing. And then at the Austin Film Society, I actually was an apprentice film teacher. So I was an assistant and helped. So I kind of learned by doing, you know, you learn by teaching. I helped, I knew basic things. And then the teacher that I was helping helped, we all kind of learned things to help the middle school kids in this downtown school after school program. Then after that, I was on set. So I was an extra on Friday Night Lights quite a bit.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, when you're an extra, they'll pull you in and let you hang around the Video Village. And people will tell you, okay, now this area where the camera is, that's called Video Village. Or they'll tell you, okay, that's a PA, that means production assistant. He or she is going to do this job, and you have to act like this. And so you don't have to have any acting skills, but you kind of learn. It's like you get paid to learn a little bit about film while you're there. So between this, that, and the other, that was kind of my film education. And then my friends knew a lot more. So they always say, surround yourself with people who know more than you. So, you know, then you get people, my rule was, well, if they know what an F-stop is, I want them, you know? So,
what the heck is an F-stop?
So just read a lot and practice by doing. So
yeah, it sounds like a great way to learn something fun, and it's your job, they're paying you for it, and you're soaking in all the things that you're interested in. Sounds like a perfect setup.
You know what I love about you? It sounds like you are like me and KJ. We would say yes and then figure out how to do things afterwards.
Exactly. And that's what happened with the web series. You know, I was just like, my friend was like, you should do this. I was like, okay, I'll do it. And then I was like, how do I do this? And it did work out. I mean, I had some really talented people. Austin has a film school right there, so I had a couple. The first episode, there were two recent film graduates that were really talented with the camera, and a couple of people had been crew on Friday Night Lights. And then the next episode, I was fortunate to get Robert Murphy, who is an amazing cinematographer. He had worked on Alex Holdridge's In Search of the Midnight Kiss, which is a gorgeous black and white movie. It's a kind of a mumblecore thing. I don't know if you guys have seen it. So, and then his latest one is Meet Me in Montenegro. And so he's a really amazing cinematographer. So he got some great shots of the Enchanted Rock out in Texas, that kind of thing. So
wow.
I was really lucky to have some great people and great editors. Austin is just full of really talented people. So.
Yeah, it's definitely a good place for that. The keep it weird or whatever their slogan is.
Yeah.
Lots of artsy people there. That sounds great. It sounds like really perfect for your personality, just kind of like a go get it, interested in a lot of different things and willing to try new stuff. Tell us a little bit about the plot of the novel and how is it different from the web series?
The plot is a lot different. One of the actors who was in the web series read it, and it really just digs a lot deeper into the characters. The web series is kind of what happens once she already has superpowers. This is more of an origin story.
Right.
So basically the story opens in Mexico and she's a teenage girl. Her dad runs a convenience store and he's a secret vigilante. And she's just starting to figure this out, that there's a vigilante kind of like Batman who is fighting back against the cartels. There's drug wars going on. They live in a border town and he has discovered something that is getting him in a lot of trouble. And she can tell something's going on. And he has a plan, but the plan doesn't go well. And he ends up getting killed. And she's right there when it happens. And then when he dies, something weird happens. There's like a transfer of power. All this blue light runs from him into her. And she feels this surge because she was shot too. But she heals and he dies. So the book from there on is her dealing with the grief of her father, and then dealing with these new abilities that she's got. And then her mom is, and her little brother in terrible shape. So there, the mother moves them across the border back to where her family's in Texas. So she's in a new school. So it kind of now starts blending with the web series a little bit in the new school. And basically the rest of the story, she's trying to track down the guys and carry on her father's mission. And her father has left a lot of clues for her, hidden in the comic books that she's been reading.
Ooh.
And so he's left all these clues. So she and her father's kind of right-hand man, a guy a couple years older than her, kind of are teenage, like Wonder Woman, the teenage years type thing, you know, like, yeah. Or like Smallville. They're the young versions of the superheroes they'll one day be trying to track down the father's killers.
Oh, that sounds really good. It sounds, I can just picture a lot of it as you're saying that. Now, how, you were living in Michigan when you wrote this. How do you know, how did you get inspired to do the Mexican Texas, kind of that whole feel, that vibe?
Well, the first draft of the screenplay, I was in Michigan, and then we moved to Austin. So I, you know, Spanish teacher, and I had been listening to a lot of, I've been watching a whole bunch of movies out west. I've been watching El Mariachi, Once Upon a Time, Mexico, Desperado. I said those in the wrong order. I've been watching Kill Bill 2, came out around that time.
Right.
And they're all in the desert. They're all gorgeous. We took a vacation. We went out to Arizona, to Sedona and all that. And I had also been at the Santa Fe Screenwriters Conference and, just the desert was like a big thing for a couple of years. I became upset right around that time. And I think even we were watching Westerns, like old Westerns. So just that vibe was a big deal. And then I had been to El Paso when I was 15. I had a Girl Scout YR opportunity and spent a week there with a family. And it made a big impression on me. I just really liked the town. I loved the mountains. I loved the whole look of it all. I liked the people, everything about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so I'd always kind of had a little affinity toward Texas, and then moving there, you know, just immersed me in it, and I could make it more real, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that sounds really good. So you're kind of obsessed with that part of the country. Then you ended up moving there and turned it into this amazing book, screenplay, web series, blah, blah, blah. Pretty cool. All right, so if somebody is out there wanting to be, you know, who's a novel writer that wants to consider adapting a book into a screenplay, what is the advice you would give them?
Well, if they want to take their own novel and adapt it into the screenplay, I would certainly tell them that people tend to like the book more than the movie. So you need to know that, because sometimes people are, you know, you hear that all the time. But I think people like the movie better when it's the novelist that adapted it, right? You hear about that a lot. You have to be able to cut, because a novel is going to be, you know, at least 200 pages, but probably more likely 250 or 300. And, you know, the actors are there to do all the acting and expressing everything, and you don't need to go on about what they're thinking, and you can't. And yeah. Same thing with all the description. The camera is just going to be pointed at the desert. You know, so if it's Lawrence of Arabia, we get it. You know, you don't have to go on and describe it. So, you know, there's going to be less, and you have to make some sacrifices, and some people might have to be, characters might have to be combined, locations might not be available, you know. So yeah. Sometimes it's a compromise.
Yeah.
It's worth it. They should do it if they want to do it. You know, you learn a lot about where things fit.
Yeah, it sounds like we've talked to several people who do screenplays and film writing. And just dealing with Suzanne, who does that, there's a really useful tool where you make it very simple and get the plot points very strongly and the character arc and all that stuff. And there's something about screenwriters that end up being really good novelists if they can write, it's in terms of like the plotting and the structure of the story. They seem to have that down pretty well. So
Yeah, because a screenplay is really just its structure. And so many times you see these books and people talk about the Hollywood formula or something, but it's just there inherently, and it's you're more aware of it in a movie because a movie has to end at a certain time. You know, it lasts as long as your bladder will, right?
That's a good way of looking at it. And sometimes not quite that long. That's funny. All right. So tell us about your writing process. What do you do? Like, do you have a certain place that you sit and you have a certain time of day? Sounds like weekends are your preference. How does that work when you go to write?
Yeah, I'm a morning person. Usually weekends in the morning, I have a writing room. And
a writing room.
I have it all set up. And then whatever I'm writing, I tend to listen to music that kind of inspires me for that. Sometimes I'll have like certain... You know, like, I'll even have candles, like, a certain smell will be for one thing, and it's, you know, like, scent. And, like, I did a lot of cinnamon spice type pumpkin, because there's a store in Austin that has that smell, Mikasa. It's a really good store. So, like, whatever kind of things I could do, I just sometimes I'll do incense, and, I write in the morning, and if I'm going well, I'll write a couple hours, 2-3 hours, and then I just emerge and I'm done. But if I'm editing, I could be in there all day, so It just depends on what stage I'm in.
Yeah, that's good. That sounds like I love that you're using all of your senses, though. You're using, there's auditory, there's sense. That's a really good way to kind of immerse yourself back into it. I should try that.
Yeah.
It sort of makes you, like, when I did the, you know, sometimes when I'm, one of them was a period piece in the Court of Lions, so sometimes the incense would make me feel like I was in Spain or something, you know, and the other things would make me feel like I'm in the United States. So it just kind of helps to put you in the right spot if you're switching between projects.
I love that. Suzanne, what were you going to say?
I was actually going to say, are you still juggling that as being a teacher? Right? Being a teacher is still your full-time job, is that right?
Yep. Yeah, it's hard to do. So I've throughout the years, I've kind of taken time off here and there. But yeah, I enjoy it, and, you know, it's a great job, so... This year I got to teach a film class, Spanish film and conversation, so it was great.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I bet, and the kids liked that.
Yeah, and we got to do a lot of screenwriting and talk about that. We invited a guest screenwriter, so it was great.
Wow, I bet they loved that, something different.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, Suzanne, I think we're probably ready for the lightning round. What do you
think? Yeah, I think so.
Cool, man. All right, Amy, are you ready to be lightning rounded?
I'm ready.
Yay. Okay. All right. What is your favorite band or artist?
I guess I have to go with the Frank Allison and the Odd Socks. They're the group from Ann Arbor that I made a little documentary about.
Did anything come up with the documentary? I meant to ask you that when you were talking about it.
Again, like their music, it was very popular within a 100 mile radius. His fans love it, and they still, you'll hear comments that they really appreciate being able to see it live again. Frank has a little quote at the end, you know, you can entertain, sing a song and make your kid laugh, or you can do a whole stadium and it's really the same thing, you know, so yeah, it was just something fun. You'll see him live again, you know.
Now, is that available on YouTube? Can people go look that up?
It's on YouTube. It's on Amazon. Right now they're shifting over their files or something, turning it all into Video Direct or something, but yeah, it's on both of those, and There's not a website. Don't worry about the web. There is a website, but don't worry about it.
Yeah, okay. I thought you were going to say your favorite band was Vinny and the Iguanas.
Yeah.
Your husband wants you to say that. All right. Left coast or right coast?
I like both. I live on the right. I like the rocks in New England and Maine, but I like the west coast. You know, I've always wanted to go to the Pacific Northwest. California's gorgeous.
Yeah, that's where Susanna is, up in Washington State. Yeah. What is your favorite writing spot?
I have a little writing room, and I have a little in-out box with a blanket. And my cat sits right there on the corner of my desk and just hangs out and watches me while I write.
I love
that. What's the name of your cat?
Lucy.
Hey, Lucy.
Lucy, that's cute. I love that.
She was a little concerned that there were voices coming out of the computer. So
that's only when you write that doesn't happen, right?
She's getting all freaked out. That's funny. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
I am mostly a pantser, but then once I pant, then I plot.
That's me too.
Yeah, a little bit of each.
Good combination. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
I thought about this a lot because this second book has some time travel in it.
Ooh.
I think it'd be really fun to go to the 60s and go like to California and see the Doors and see all those bands. And to go back also and watch classic movies being made.
Oh,
like,
cool.
To go to 1974, 1975 to Martha's Vineyard and watch Steven Spielberg and tell him, you know, it's okay. I know the shark doesn't work, but it's okay. It's going to turn out. Don't worry about it, you know?
You're going to be a classic. Just do what you do, man. That's so funny. I love that that's the filmmaker in you. That's a brilliant answer. I love that. I love it. If you had a superpower, this is a good one for you, what would you want it to be?
I don't know. I'd love Janie's superpower. She has telepathy. I always thought that would be fun. Yeah. Aquaman had telepathy. I thought that was neat when I was a kid. Invisibility would be cool, too. I do have one superpower, and that is that I don't get parking tickets.
That's your superpower.
Years in Ann Arbor, and one day I just vowed I will not get any more tickets. And I don't get them anymore.
Awesome.
So, rock on wood.
And you're in the Boston area. There's plenty of parking tickets to be had there.
I know. And so far, I'm sticking with my superpower.
That's your superpower. You're hilarious. Which book do you wish you had written?
I was going to practice that one. I was going to think about an answer, and I didn't. Let's see.
Forgot.
You know, I guess kind of related to time travel. I kind of wish I'd written A Movable Feast by Hemingway.
Oh, wow.
Just because I would have loved to have been there, you know, like Paris in the 20s,
hanging out
with all those people. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Who or what inspires you?
I think everybody. I mean, everybody around me, movies, songs, music. So I don't know if there's a very good answer. But
no, after the interview I just heard, I think that's exactly true, though. That rings very true. Yeah, I mean, you seem to pick up on all kinds of cool things and turn them into these amazing ideas. Good talent. What is your favorite writing/author moment so far?
It's actually not me, but I remember when I was an undergrad at the University of Michigan, my English 223 creative writing teacher made us go to readings. And we had to go to fiction readings. We had to go to like 10 throughout the semester, which was a lot. It was like every week. And I loved being like right in person with these amazing writers. And I loved hearing all their different voices, reading. And then after that, there was a day, Sandra Cisneros, she wrote The House on Mango Street. She was coming, and I was so excited, but I had to work. And I couldn't really, we were supposed to have a meeting, and I was supposed to work. And I found somebody who didn't have that schedule, and he was going to fill in for me so I could go to the reading. And I went to the meeting to tell them that I was going to, and then they were like, if you have some place you'd rather be, you know, that usually means, you know, that's you. And I'm like, I do have some place I'd rather be.
People
are like, well, if you have some place you'd rather be, just go. I'm like, okay. I'm so excited.
That is hilarious.
Go for me, I think, to the reading and get my book signed. I got to go instead. And So then I met Sandra Cisneros. It was very exciting. And then she was having a spazzy day. And so this was in Ann Arbor. And she wrote in the book, not San Antonio, which is where she's from, you goof, Ann Arbor. So that was my favorite moment because I got to go. And then she kind of goofed up the writing and in the book. And it was very exciting.
That is cool. I love that. You're just like, yeah, yes. Actually, I would so much rather be anywhere else than here. And I'm leaving now. That's so funny. Oh, my gosh.
And they were fine with it. So it worked out okay.
Yeah, and did you get fired from the job? Were they?
Yeah, they were fine. Yeah, they were like, "How was it?" And I was like, "It was great."
Okay. That's good. At least it turned out well. It could have been like, you know, then I lost my job and couldn't afford the rest of school. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, my life is over now. I have an autographed book.
That's so funny. All right, last question. One thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer.
I wish that I'd been told you can write whatever the heck you want. Because, you know, I mean, when I first started, I remember my first day in the English class at University of Michigan, they went around the circle and you were supposed to say what books you liked. And, you know, I told them. And everybody just looked at me like, you like that? You know, and so the whole thing was all about this literary excellence. And I have to say, I love my professors, and Charles Baxter is like a writer's writer. You know, he's amazing. But that just wasn't who I was, you know? And so to find out, and that's why I got interested in screenwriting, to find out that you can write and you can write about whatever. And people can be invisible, or they can fly, or they can break into banks and go through little ventilation things. You know, you can have spies. To just realize you don't have to sit there and write all this beautiful literary fiction, which I do appreciate, but you don't have, not everybody is the same. And you can write whatever comes out of your other end of your computer. You can do whatever you want.
That is great advice. And it's a good lesson too, because I mean, you can't be Hemingway. You can't, you know, when you go to write that stuff, if it isn't in you, it's going to come out very false and very annoying for the reader. So you have to go with what is inside of you and go with that. Embrace.
Yeah, it might not be what people want or like, but it's what you're writing.
Well, and I mean, that's the thing, though. Like Suzanne is always saying, find your audience. It may not be the thing that the guy sitting next to you likes, but who cares what he likes? Go find your audience. There's people.
Exactly.
Out there. Yeah, as long as you write well, there's people out there. Now, if you can't write, that's a whole nother story. But cool. Well, this has been so much fun, Amy. I'm so glad
to get to chat
with you and kind of dig inside your brain a little bit. I'm very inspired by just hearing about all the things that, you know, you've brought to life through your imagination. So keep up with it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, lovely to speak to you again, Amy. I'm sure we'll be in touch in the future if I come down to Austin.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. And it's a great thing that you do for writers. And it's really informative podcast. So,
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Please join us next week where we welcome the second half of Joey Pinkney's interview. He's the one who has the tweet service, is very good at book marketing and social media to promote books, and he is a short story specialist. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.